hearing to order for Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. We have a forum. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Okay. Recognitions and proclamations. We have the new hire introductions, and what's the proper procedure for this case? Do you want?
We just usually go up there and introduce ourselves.
And this is the first time I've done this job. If you would come up here next to the, just kind of stand there in a group. So, I'm Terry Thompson, County Commissioner. Bill Hall and Doug Hunt. Would you introduce yourself and tell us what the positions you're going to go for? Be in the county.
Good morning. I'm Patty, and I'm a medical assistant with Health and Human Services. I'll be at the Walport School Base soon.
My name is George Partridge, and I work with Health and Human Services over at the Primary Care Clinic, and I'll be working with veterans and county patients.
My name is Greg Sutton. I'm a property appraiser with the Lincoln County Assessor's Office.
Bill Holden, property appraiser with the Lincoln County Assessor's Office.
Teresa Winters, over at Health and Human Services, clinical counselor, child and family.
And in the back there,
David Lee, of the background investigator for Lincoln County Sheriff's Office.
And I'm Phoebe Nordic, and I am doing the representative payee and billing over Health and Human Services.
And
well, we got one more.
Just in time.
Just in time.
Yeah.
Hi, introduce yourself.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Rick Shirey. I'm one of the new hires here. I'm going to be a background investigator with the Sheriff's Department.
Hey, good. Well, welcome to Lincoln County. Try not to be late.
I'm going to go in the first
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everybody.
Look forward to seeing you again.
Yep.
Okay, we move down to the consent calendar. And consent calendar items are things of routine nature we've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to highlight, delete, or change?
No, Mr. Chair, I would move for adoption of the consent calendar as presented.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Get down to public hearings. A supplementary budget for the 2016-2017 fiscal year for a mental health fund, the Capital Fund, and the Title III Fund. Janice Riesbeck.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Oh, excuse me. This is the one. I have to open a public hearing. It's open.
This public hearing is being held because we are adjusting the budgets for the Mental Health Fund and the Capital Projects Fund, and those adjustments are more than 10% of the total fund. Basically, what's happening is the Mental Health Fund is appropriating a transfer to the Capital Projects Fund to for the purchase of the respite housing and improvement of it. And both of those were new appropriations that constituted more than 10% of each of those funds, so about $300,000.
Questions, comments? Doug, you're still looking.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I have no questions.
Yeah, so essentially we're moving money over from the Mental Health Fund to Capital Projects to complete the purchase of the property, which we've already approved.
Yeah, which will provide mental health services.
Exactly.
So then, Wayne, we...
You need to ask for public comment.
And we'll go to public comment on this. Seeing none?
I can close the hearing.
Okay, I'll close the hearing.
You're ready to take action.
So,
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve Resolution 17-08-02, adopting a supplemental budget for Lincoln County for fiscal year 2016-17 and making appropriations.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We move down to decision and action. Decision in action, we're calling for the election for the proposed of supplementing purpose of supplementing to the electors of Coronado Shore Special Road District the question of whether the district shall be dissolved or not.
Mr. Chair, before Mr. Herbage begins, could I make a motion that we appropriate funds to purchase a black hood for him, since he seems to be our designated executioner of obsolete districts? How many will this be now?
This will be the fifth.
Fifth, okay.
How many do we have to go?
Probably a similar number.
Okay, so very good.
That's, if you think about it, that's pretty amazing that we've reduced that much in the county. I've been here 12 years, 14 years, whatever it is, and I don't think we've ever accomplished but one or two of these.
And remember, we've had about 50 or 60 years to create these things on that water. They served their purpose, and now they don't.
So right. Would you explain what we're going to do this time?
Thank you. For the record, Jerry Herbage, Assistant County Counsel. The fifth among these special districts is the Coronado Shore Special Road District. This board is quite familiar with the situation. This was a district, non-taxing district, in existence for over 40 years. And in the past, they had received their funding from a homeowners association called the Coronado Shores Beach Club. But to get right down to the chase here, in 2015, Assistant Counsel Kristen Yule was in contact with them, had some concern about their organization, and what the district decided to do was to begin dissolution itself in 2015. So all of the directors resigned. There has been no activity from the district since the summer of 2015, and what they did is turned over their funds to the Homeowners Association, told the Homeowners Association no more funding, don't send us any more money. So this in part is a housekeeping exercise, but it's legally required. And as Wayne had explained to you, all of these are different, all these dissolutions, because there's a lot of different statutes and so on that can apply and to some and not to others and so on. This will require an election. So what I'm going to ask that you do is I'm going to ask that you consider approving the order that I have before you. It has been previously read, and attached to that is the notice of measure election, and then there's an explanatory statement. The Wayne is big on due diligence. We ran the notice of measure election by the clerk and got his approval. Also ran it by Janelle Gifford. She was the petitioner who got the signatures that would bring this to an election. And within staff and stuff, Wayne has reviewed that. So I'm asking you to approve the order of that, and then also attach an explanatory statement for the voters' pamphlet. And we will coordinate with the with Dana of our clerk's office and make sure that this gets taken care of. This will meet the deadlines for the May 16th election. That's when this would come up. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have one, Wayne, or are you? I'm not sure. But, you know, we're basically closing down 10 districts, but how many districts do we have in the county approximately? I mean, I don't want to get the idea that we're, you know, going to shut down all sports.
We're unusual in the sense that we have all of these special road districts.
Right.
My understanding, there's only one other county that has anywhere near the number of special road districts that we have, and that's Deschutes County. I don't really know the total number because there's all kinds of different districts. You know, some of the districts are we're responsible for appointing boards, like certain special road districts. Many other districts have independently elected boards and therefore really have no nexus with the county other than we are the tax collector for all the districts that do taxes. So I can't really give you a good feel off the top of my head for how many different districts.
But the treasurer or assessor could give us that number.
The clerk actually has. Yeah,
sort of, you know, well, are we talking
the clerk and our office?
Are we talking in excess of 1,000?
No,
but dozens. Okay.
Is there 100 districts? I think
I think we're in the 100s.
Yeah, between road, water, sewer. Yeah.
Seems to me at one time when I was working on a presentation, there's 72 different taxing districts, but that doesn't include the major ones, the cities, the school district.
Right.
But those would be water, roads, other...
Sanitary. Aren't there even a few lighting districts?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of districts. Mm-hmm.
So my I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood.
Lighting districts. Mm-hmm. You name it, we got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my purpose in having...
70 to 75 instead of 75 to 80.
Yeah, we're not doing away with special districts.
No. That was the purpose for my question.
Whittling,
so people understand.
Whittling the deadwood, but keeping the ones that are still functional.
So... No other questions?
No. Mr. Chair, I would commend Mr. Urbich for his usual due diligence in preparing this for us, and I really don't think there's any unsettled questions, so I'm ready to move forward and move that we approve this proposed order calling for an election for the purpose of submitting to the electors of the Coronado Shores Special Road District the question of whether the district shall be dissolved.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Move down to item B, proposed change in the Lincoln County fee schedule for 2016-17.
Commissioners, I'm going to respond to this one. You've already considered this particular matter. This is twice a year we pay fees in the county, make adjustments as necessary. As you may recall, we only had actually one change that was proposed to us, and that was to adjust the county work crew fee to actually do what we have sort of been looking at anyway, which is to make it have a range of costs depending on the number of folks that are actually assigned to the work crew that are available on any given day. That's the way they charge that. So that changes that fee to $175 to $450 per day for the county work crew to do the work that it does. But there's no other changes, and we've received no other public comments about the fee schedule.
I'll take a motion unless you've got any comments.
No, pretty straightforward. We're only changing one item. I'll move for approval of the order adopting the changes to the 2016-2017 fee schedule for departments of Lincoln County.
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. So we move down to discussion information and integrated health care facility wellness center.
We got to shorten that name.
Wellness Center.
Or come up with an acronym.
A couple of quick comments here. This is a prelude to applying for, we're actually in the process of applying to the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA's Rural Development Program for a loan to construct this proposed health center. There's a lot of work that's involved in this. I know Director Connell and myself have spent a lot of time pulling together information to move this thing forward, and this is another touch point in that particular process. We have, I'll note for the record that we have published a notice of this particular meeting. This is an opportunity to get, for the community, to get more information about the project, to further acquaint the community with what's being proposed here, talk about the possible economic and environmental impacts, what the service area would be, what kinds of services will be provided, and then receive any public comment on the proposed application for a loan from the public. There'll be other touch points in this whole process as we come back and talk to you about it as it moves forward, but this is something on the front end of the project. With that, I'll turn it over to Director Connell, and she'll talk about this.
Thank you, Wayne. Good morning, Commissioners. Before I begin, I wanted to just have a technical note be brought to your attention. I recently had eye surgery, and my eyes will tend to water as part of the healing process. So I just wanted to let you know that should you see me suddenly tearing up, I'm not getting emotional. I'm healing.
Okay. Darn.
All right. So as we have known before, as Council Belmont has just pointed out, we are in the process of applying for a loan through the Rural Development, USDA Rural Development, for our integrated site. We recently did get a letter that says that we have processed enough to be pre-approved the pre-application process. Now we just have to submit some final documentation for the final approval. So I wanted to just note that we have made progress since we last met on this. Since this is a hearing to explain a little bit about it, I'm going to briefly go through what we're proposing so that everyone who might be here in the audience or listening will be able to have some more information regarding this. So, what we are proposing to do is build a 45,000 square foot facility here in Newport to be able to have all of the services that we provide currently in four sites in Newport in one facility. And the purpose of this is to not just have everyone in one building, but to actually improve the care that we give to all of the individuals that we serve in all of our three divisions: primary care, behavioral health, and public health. I'd like to read the definition of integrated health care, because this is the core concept that's driving the need for this building and what we're proposing. This is according to the World Health Organization. Integrated care is a concept bringing together inputs, delivery, management, and organization of services related to diagnosis, treatment, care, rehabilitation, and health promotion. Integration is a means to improve services in relation to access, quality, user satisfaction, and efficiency. So not only is it better care, but it's also now really the expectation that many of the providers that give us money for services, from the state to private health care providers, are expecting that we have in all of our services. And again, our services are public health, mental health, addictions, primary care, rehabilitation services, environmental health, vital records, as well as community health promotion. Who does Lincoln County Health and Human Services serve? Well, we serve veterans, adults, pregnant women, children and families, teens and adolescents, individuals and families with developmental disabilities, individuals and families with severe mental illness, individuals and families with addictions, and, in general, the public, businesses, and communities. So, one of the things that's really important to understand, the driving force in this single Newport site, is that we, right now, have no room to expand, even though we have the ability, because of our services and the funding that we have for those services and the excellent quality of services we provide. We have funding, but we have no room in Newport. Literally, this budget year, this current budget year, we have identified positions that we cannot fill because we have not identified where they can be in Newport. We have run out of space. So, a single Newport site then is going to help bring more jobs to this county for a healthier local economy as well as a healthier population. A single Newport site achieves integrated health care by giving better care by HHS to our patients. It means better health for our clients at a lower cost of health care for everyone. And also, a single Newport site really does fulfill the Lincoln County mission statement, which is to provide essential public services, both legally required and locally desired, in an efficient, effective, and respectful manner. Now, I know you all know this, but for the folks in the audience or on tape that don't know, I'm going to just do a brief history of Lincoln County Health and Human Services. Actually, Lincoln County Health and Human Services was created in 1989. At that time, the Board of Commissioners combined the county public health program and the county mental health program under one director, one administration, one finance staff. In 2006, we grew. We added our federally qualified health center. We received a grant to open our primary care services, and so in July of 2006, we officially started offering primary care to everyone in Lincoln County, regardless of their ability to pay or insurance accessibility. In 2010, we entered into an agreement with the Portland VA to have the support for one of their VA physicians to be able to see VA veterans here in Lincoln County so that they wouldn't have to make the trip to Salem or to Portland. So that has grown since 2010. That started in Newport, but we recently added services in Lincoln City, again, because there was a capacity constraint. We could not expand in Newport like the VA had originally desired because we didn't have the space. I already touched a little bit about our growth, but here again are the facts regarding our growth trends in the last 5 years. We've had an 80% increase in Health and Human Services employee. It went from 103 to 183 that we have currently budgeted in this fiscal year, and again, not all of which we can fill because of constraints and capacity for space. We've had an 80% increase in revenue and reserves. We've gone from about $13.9 million to $25.4 million. And we've had a 50% relative decrease in county general fund contribution to the Health and Human Services budget. So what that means is that we have grown the budget, but we haven't grown the budget through additional general fund. The general fund that is contributed to Health and Human Services has remained at $307,000, and so that has shrunk to 1.3% of the total HHS budget over the past 5 years. So as I said earlier, we are scattered hither and yon in Newport, and we are bursting at the seams at most of our sites. So the four sites in Newport that clients have to find are at the Western Title Building, at Lee Street, at Nye Street, and at the 1010 building where our primary care services are. So just imagine for a minute, you're a client and you come into what you think is going to be Health and Human Services. They have to figure out, well, first of all, where is the site that I'm supposed to be at? Am I in the right place? And how do I get to the right place? And those really are barriers for our clients to get the necessary integrated health care and other vital services that they want and we want to provide. So that's just what we're up against right now. And we have literally hit the wall. So we are also, in addition to having the inability to grow our services because we've hit the wall, because we're in four different sites, it causes operational and staffing inefficiencies. So I really want our services to be the most cost-effective and cost-efficient. So we're not able to do that right now because we are scattered hither and yon. And the lack of space is beginning to be an issue for staff recruitment and retention. The worst of our sites, the most crowded of our sites, is at our primary care site. And, you know, we really need to add more staff there to meet the demand for services, but we really are crammed into 1010, and we have no room to expand there for our primary care services. So what we're looking at then is a total budget of around if we build within the next 18 months, we are looking at an amount of approximately $17.6 million for a 45,000 square foot site. The site has been designed to be able to accommodate not only what we have currently budgeted for positions and growth, but to look 5 to 10 years into the future to see what that growth is going to be and ensure that we have the space that we need for services. So we aren't going to move in and the next day go, darn, I wish we would have added more space. We've accommodated that planning, and I think it's going to be a wonderful facility. So, just to remind you, this is the conceptual drawing. This would be the front of the building on Southwest 2nd Street. This would be the side of the building on Lee Street across from, or excuse me, Nye Street across from the post office. And the site, which has already been identified, would be here. And it is on the southern border of the existing courthouse parking lot, right across from the current post office on that southwest corner. And you can see the configuration with the other county buildings here. And as part of the need for parking, these buildings will no longer exist after the structure is done, because the individuals in those places are going to be able to move into the space that we're vacating at the county-owned property at Nye and Lee Street. So the county will be able to, again, use those spaces that we're vacating, because we will be moving lock, stock, and barrel into this new facility. And then lastly, these are my wonderful staff at Health and Human Services. This was taken a little over about a year ago, actually 9 months ago. And since that time, we have added 10 more staff. So these are the individuals that work their hearts out to help our services be the best and most efficient for everyone here in Lincoln County. And they really deserve that space to do their best and be their best. So with that, I conclude my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Director Connell, thank you for that presentation. I think you did an excellent job of recapping the many and compelling reasons that we are looking at this project. The need is really undeniable. And I want the public, people in the audience, people watching or listening, you know, to be aware that it is not something we're moving forward lightly on. This will be by far the biggest capital project in the history of the county organization, and I know that you and your team have been working on this for years, and I want to commend the hard work and preparation you've done. But another observation, which will then lead into my question, is certainly, government funding for any program or service is never guaranteed over the long term. But it seems like right now, at this particular time, when it comes to health care, due to a variety of circumstances, from the $1.8 billion budget, the shortfall the state of Oregon is facing, to the very lively discussion taking place in Washington, D.C. about major changes, reforms, or outright scrapping and starting over with the Affordable Care Act, it seems like healthcare, publicly financed healthcare programs, are in an unusual level of flux. And do you still believe, given this climate, it's wise for us to be moving forward with this project at this time?
I appreciate that question, because, you know, that is on everybody's mind at this time, whether they're able to want to face that or not. So my answer is simply this. You know, we have a ways to go before we really find out what is going to be happening, both at the state level with funding for Medicaid in particular, but also some other health and human services, as well as what's happening at the federal level. So I think the quick answer to the question is that we have to be nimble, and we have to be looking at what our other options might be should the worst scenario happen. And the worst scenario, in my mind, is that the Affordable Care Act gets totally gutted. I think that unless somebody has a better crystal ball, that I've been able to ascertain what's happening in Washington right now, it's really hard to discern. So that said, I think that we are going to continue to be, and I'm going to be continuing to be vigilant about what's happening and looking at what this means for Health and Human Services potentially. And when it comes to this site, I think the answer really is, once we have a better idea, we'll look at how we modify it. I mean, it's probably, we'll probably still have an integrated site. It doesn't mean an integrated site is not going to be unnecessary. We still have the need. But it would be looking at, if we really do have to scale back, what would be scaling back the building in order to meet that need, which would mean that it would be less cost for the county and less cost for the contribution that Health and Human Services would be making to that. You know, I think it's important, though, to point out that I have very dedicated staff who are willing to work very hard to make this happen. And I think that because we have some financial stability within HHS, with the statistics I just gave you, you know, we have a bit of breathing room should we have to continue for a while without the rigorous financial support that we currently have, especially under the Affordable Care Act. So that's my long and short answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a good answer. What, and I don't know if Director Connell can answer this or if Councilor Belmont can, but are there limitations as to what we can do with the building if we pursue this financing? In other words, if for whatever reasons the needs or the financial support to provide services shrink and we have available space in that building, are there limitations as to what we can do with it?
There are, but I have asked this question of the funders at RD, you know, what are the sideboards of what we can do with that building? I can tell you this, and we're going to get some further confirmation because I think that's a question you need to have answered as you go forward with this. What other flexibility do we have with the structure if it is built? What they indicated to me is that the biggest limitations are on utilization of the building for profit activities. They limit either the square footage or mostly the square footage that you can actually utilize for those purposes. It can't be left more than 10% of the building can be used for that. You've seen some of these structures in which they put in some kind of, you know, coffee shop or whatever it might be in the bottom of them, but there's a limitation on that. What they told me, though, other than that, we can use it for other government services, including any other county services. And so that is something that if push came to shove and we needed to utilize it for other purposes, we could do so. But I'm going to make sure that we get that very specifically in writing as we proceed with this. That would be my preliminary conversations with them.
I think that would go a long way toward mitigating the risk that certainly the future funding and structure of healthcare is somewhat nebulous. And being able to, knowing that we could use that space for other county services or, I guess, in theory, other nonprofit services, I think goes a long way mm-hmm. toward mitigating that risk. So, good.
And one of the things that I wanted to point out, too, is that we had built into this plan to be able to have space for the Veterans Services officers to be able to move from their lease space into this space, which again is working towards integration for the VA folks that are doing healthcare to be able to be close to the Veterans Services officers that the county employs. And the other thing too that we had built into this is meeting room space. There is a significant there's space identified as a community meeting room, public meeting room that could accommodate up to 200 people. And so that would be something that would help to meet the needs of Lincoln County's other departments because of the requirements that everyone has for it, meetings. And it would be able to be utilized after hours as well as during office hours without impacting operations within the building for healthcare and those other integrated services. So that's part of what the square footage is, to be able to have more utility than just for Health and Human Services to be able to offer to the county and to the community as a whole.
Thank you. I'm going to ask a question here. Kind of along the same lines. I mean, none of us know what's going to happen from the federal government, and that's a huge portion of your budget. But you also have a considerable amount from the state. And just taken with the $2.1 billion hole that's in the budget, and if you calculate that Health and Human Services is about a third of that normally, if I remember right, am I wrong in the proportion?
I think
it
it's
changed.
It's probably more like 25%. But
okay,
yeah.
Well, it's close.
But I'm hearing when they talk about the deficit, they're attributing about a third of it to HHS.
Right. That's what I. Yeah. That was the old number I used to use a long time ago when I was in the legislature. So that makes approximately $600 million spread out around the state. That comes if we had to cover that whole hole. Which I hopefully the legislature can resolve. Mm-hmm. A lot of that doesn't happen. That'd be a pretty big hit in your department. Do you have a feel for what that hit percentage-wise would look like?
It's hard to determine right now, and here's why. We get very little money for primary care services from the state budget. What we get is primarily, besides Medicaid, but from grants, it's our school-based health center grants that are primarily in primary care. In behavioral health, we do get a significant amount of funding from the state. That said, the state is under a mandate with the U.S. Department of Justice for ensuring that the care that is given to people with mental illness is done in a certain way. And Oregon has been struggling to meet those requirements of DOJ, and so they have to meet those requirements of DOJ. A lot of the money that we're getting right now for mental health services from the state is directly tied into meeting those requirements. That doesn't mean that they're not going to cut mental health funds, but they're going to have to be pretty selective to not endanger what the state has to do to ensure DOJ that they're addressing these deficiencies. But let's just say that we do get cut 20% in behavioral health and 20% in public health. Much of the reasons that we're getting those funds is because you are the local mental health authority and you've accepted that responsibility and therefore get these funds, and you're also the local public health authority. And under Oregon statute and Oregon rules, there are certain requirements for service levels that you have to meet when you accept that responsibility. I'm not saying that this is a good idea or that you would want to do that, but depending on the level of cuts, I think that would be a time to have the conversation. Can we really do this? Can we really accept this? These authorities and operate under that if there is going to be these severe cuts? We can't thin the soup excessively because then nobody gets services and we're endangering the lives of those that we're supposed to be serving. I don't want to do that. So it may come down to some very difficult decisions that you will have to make and I will help guide you on, but I'm not really willing to go there yet. I think that we will be able to sustain. And later in the presentation that you'll see with the auditor's report, you'll see some reasons why I can say that with some confidence.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just another observation. The focus of funding, the priorities may change, but I really believe that we're still going to see a significant investment in these kind of services, both at the state and the national level. This morning I was watching live coverage on cable of President Trump addressing a national meeting of law enforcement leaders, and one of the things he talked about was wanting to get more money into supporting addictions treatment services and mental health services for people involved in the criminal justice system, which is exactly the focus of the Stepping Up initiative. And as I've talked about beforehand, you know, this is a time where at the national level, we seem to be at a level of unprecedented polarization, but this is one of the few issues where it seems like both major parties have come together that this needs to be a top focus of criminal justice reform. You know, it's not coddling or excusing people who break the law and do crimes, but it's realizing that if we don't get at the root of the problem, the mental illness and addiction that is driving so much of the crime in this country, that we'll have people just cycling in and out of jails, prisons, courts, and back into the community over and over. And we're never going to eradicate it, but we can reduce it. And I think, you know, the same mantra when I presented us the Stepping Up initiative: lower costs, better outcomes, safer communities. And I think we're going to continue to move that way.
And the other thing, too, to segue with that is, I know that you, as the local mental health authority and local public health authority, take those that responsibility very seriously. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate the support that we've been getting, especially around our public health modernization needs and our public health accreditation needs, to be able to bring to our communities the prevention that we really need, as Commissioner Hall was saying, in a wide variety of issues that will not only help the health of the community and community members, but also will ultimately lower the costs of keeping everyone safe and healthy. So, you know, that's another thing that, you know, with the staff that I have and with my director's team, I'm very confident that we will come up with the best solution possible to be able to advise you to how we need to proceed should there be the draconian cuts that could happen. Again, I'm you know, show me the money. Show me the money.
At this point, I'm going to move to a public hearing.
Public comment.
Public comment.
Good discussion.
Thank you, Sean.
And is there anyone here who wants to testify in the public comment on this subject? Okay. Second time, anyone here to testify under public comment on this subject?
Oh, I do. This is on the wellness center that you're planning in the parking lot?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. My name is Cynthia George, and I did question that when I read about it in the paper, because we do have the new Samaritan facility down the road, and I can't imagine that with the health cuts that we're going to all see, what we need a wellness center, another one built. It seems like, with all that's going on, we need to take a step back and not spend any more money that isn't even, we're not even sure is going to happen with the cuts to the healthcare system. So I think $18 million, I think you guys are proposing to build this wellness center, when we have not seen even decent use of the monies that we've got in mental health in this community as it is. There's lacking services, huge disparity in the services that we get in this community for mental health. And so another building just seems to be a waste of money when we could actually put it into maybe a treatment. Now, is this going to hold an actual treatment facility?
We are doing treatment already, outpatient treatment. So it will be a treatment, continue to offer outpatient treatment.
Well, we need to look into, I would think, we need to look into better ways of treating the addiction problems in Lincoln County, because obviously it's not working, and we're losing our young ones every day to suicide, to drug addiction, and nobody's gotten a grip on it yet. And I think that it would be better spent investigating and looking into better treatment. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Any final comments?
No, I'm just waiting to be dismissed. Can I go?
Well, I'd like to say I think this is a good example of spending money up front that's going to derive some long-term savings. I think you look at the change in healthcare going from a treatment process to an inclusive wellness process. I think it'll deliver better services to our citizens. So I think there's a lot of value in this project, and I think there'll be a lot of long-term benefits.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. And also, I didn't touch on this because you know this, but for the people in the audience and listening to this tape, we are actually are spending a considerable amount of money right now on private spaces. We're having to lease space. And so we'll be able to use that money that we are currently paying private landlords to help fund this facility and to be able to help the cost moving forward. And that, I think, is really beneficial not only to our county but also to Health and Human Services to, you know, have that growth that happens and stays within Lincoln County for the space.
So can I make a request? Because that's, we don't have that number in front of us that I know of anywhere. And I think that's a key component. If we're actually spending X amount of dollars for space out there and this new facility can come and be a better place to serve, and it can be done with a cost, not necessarily a cost savings, but with a very little increase, and most of that's picked up with the federal dollars. Can we see that?
Well, I can give you an idea, and Carrie can jump in here.
Well, because this is such a big project, I'd rather you didn't give me a rough one. I'd rather actually do some work.
Didn't we talk about? Well,
can I suggest, Commissioner,
part of the process?
Yes. We've done a pro forma, but part of the process of applying for the funds to RD, and I tell you that this particular program has more I's to dot and T's to cross than anyone that I can say that we've done within a long time.
It's like applying for a grant.
It's even more detailed in some ways. It's a very detailed program. We are having to provide a great deal of financial information and examine out exactly how we intend to pay for this as part of this application process. And we'll be bringing you back some very detailed. Part of it is, of course, we've got preliminary numbers of what we're expecting the cost. We're still going to have to go through and actually, sit down, do a very public process to select final architectural team, actually consulting team that will actually do the final designs on the building, get its final estimates on the cost. So there's a lot of work that still needs to be done, and in each step along the way, we'll be touching base with you and talking about these things in much more detail in terms of that stuff. So.
And I realize that's coming, but early on in the process, I'd like to know what we're actually spending in rent in all the locations. In Lincoln County, if that's possible. There's no rush on it, but I know you've got a lot of things going on, but it seems like one of the basic things we need to let the public know is what that number is and how much of that basically, because most of that number will all go into the new facility.
That transparency is fine by me. So if you want to wait until we have the to the penny number, that's fine. We can do that.
Sure. I mean, roughly the penny. I mean, but just wild swag number.
We're going to have to do that. Obviously, we've been doing some of that work. Yeah. We're going to have to do that as part of this application process.
Until we have the actual design and projected costs, it's still going to be something of an estimate. But somewhere between to the penny and swag.
I hope I didn't insult Doug by trying to act like a banker.
So to let you know, there'll be again some more touch points as we go along. We'll be coming forward. The next thing we'll do is we're talking with bond counsel, because this is a financing. Even though it's a loan, it's a financing. We have to do some interim financing. We'll be doing a resolution that RD does require us to do to actually incorporate all the activities we're undertaking into the potential borrowing we're doing here. So that's probably the next touch point we'll have, is to consider a resolution to get that going.
Okay. Well, and I'll just note, I think obviously part of the financial information will be presented will not only be the revenues that are currently, the expenses that are currently being incurred for rental space that will in effect become revenue to service the debt, but also how this debt in totality will be serviced.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All part of the process.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I'm dismissed. Sure. Thank you.
Okay, we move down to reports, and we have elected officials and department reports. So, presentation of the comprehensive annual financial report, the CAFR, for the year ending June 30th, 2016. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been a year already. Wow.
How many years has this been?
I don't know. Are you getting tired of all my jokes?
I think this is a seven.
I like the good news you've been giving us as far as our reserves and the financial condition of the county.
So it's a pleasure to be here. I mentioned to Janice I was in Astoria last night doing an audit delivery, so I drove down and spent the night at the Holiday Inn here. They know me. I'm there often enough. They're a little disappointed I was by myself, though, instead of four of the people with me. So before we start, you know I'm known for telling jokes about my profession.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people have told me this isn't a joke, but the definition of an accountant is someone who finds a problem you didn't know you had and explains it in a manner you can't understand.
Good one.
You do that well, Paul.
All right, so all of you have heard this before, but back when Enron happened, before it happened, there was no requirement for the auditor to talk to the governing boards of whoever they audited. Now it's a requirement, and there's certain things I'm required to tell you about. And one is the auditor's and management's responsibility. If you read that audited financial statement, every place you see my letterhead, that belongs to us. Everything else really is representation of management. And our front opinion, which is a clean opinion, which is mentioned down on a later point, says there's no material misstatements in these financial statements. So what does material mean? It doesn't mean there's no errors at all in the financial statements. It means if somebody were to read those statements, we're saying there's no errors big enough to change whatever opinion they might make based on those statements. We had no findings related to the financial statements or federal awards, including the argument and standard stuff. No difficulties encountered during the audit, no misstatements detected. We had no disagreements with management on accounting issues. Management signed a representation letter. It's about 7 pages long now or something like that. It's quite lengthy. So, as you have heard me say, it basically says you didn't keep two sets of books and show me one and hide the other one in the closet. And since you have what we call a single audit, about a page and a half is just related to federal funding. Representations you make regarding federal funding. And thanks to our friends at GASB, the bottom point, Governmental Accounting Standards Board, they issue accounting rules for governments. And if you have any questions, just holler out. You guys can just interrupt me at any time. Used to be that your budgetary basis of accounting and now what we call modified accrual basis of accounting were the same. But GASB isn't changing it. So basically in these financial statements, just so it doesn't confuse anybody, it's more confusing than ever unless you do a lot of this. You now have budgetary basis of accounting, modified accrual basis of accounting, and then we switch it all to full accrual basis of accounting just to make things exciting. So your statements are getting more complicated every time. And if you look at that GASB 68 that was implemented last year about the pension, if any of you have looked at that pension footnote, I would ask if any of you understand that pension footnote.
You took the words out of my mouth. Looking at it and understanding it are two different things.
It's about 5 pages, if I remember. 4.5, 5 pages. So, and just so you know, next year, I was talking to Janice briefly before coming over here, there's a new GASB statement. There'll be a new footnote if you give tax abatement for a business that moves into the county. That'll now be required to be in a footnote. So, a new footnote coming along. Then the following year, we have this thing, which is an accounting thing called other post-employment benefit. It's related to health insurance for people who are retired. That GASB 68 footnote, your other post-employment benefit footnote will look like GASB 68 in 2 years. So.
Paul, could you just comment generally about the significance of those GASB rulings? I mean, I understand generally that it's disclosing information, mm-hmm. but it's not information that directly affects the current financial condition of the county.
The GASB footnotes, the ones that are being implemented now. So you, like all my other governments, do everything on a budgetary basis. Every month and whatever, you used to look at the financial statements, it's budgetary basis. and all the governments do that. And GASB 68 doesn't affect your budgetary basis accounting at all. Any change in the pension liability, because GASB 68 is basically putting a portion of the pension liability on your books, and your share is very small because you don't have a lot of people on PERS, just basically sheriff employees. It is just sheriff employees. It doesn't. You don't have a big section of that, a big part of that. So the only time your budgetary basis is going to change is based on the rates when PERS determines what your new rates will be. And that's done every 2 years. So that's how it affects it. So the statements, if you look at the financial statements, the only place it shows up is in your GASB 34 statements, which is the very front ones, which are all full accrual accounting. Again, that's not budgetary basis accounting at all. So as far as what you see and what you make decisions on, all of these aren't going to affect those budgetary statements at all. It's other statements that GASB now requires us to put together. That answer your question, Doug?
Yeah. I mean, it's more information, more transparency.
Yeah. Oregon minimum standards. I don't know if you know, but there's two things we have in common with the state of New Jersey. One, you can't pump your own gas. And two, it's the only two states in the country where you have to get a special license to audit governments. I've audited governments in Idaho, Nevada, California, and Oregon, and this is the only place where I'm required to have a special Oregon municipal auditor's license. And by state statute, we have to test certain things. One is deposits of public funds. You can put money in any bank you want to, up to $250,000. After that, any amount of money above that that you put into the bank, they have to be on a list that the state treasurer keeps on their website. And we test that every year. We get to download the list and make sure you have money in the banks or on the website. Debt limits. Based on the real market value of the property that is being taxed in the county, there is a debt limit, and we test whether you're over that debt limit. Now, not all debt goes against that. It's just general obligation debt that goes against that. Budget testing. There are certain steps we have to do related to your issuing the budget. So when we were doing the year-end 2016 audit, we were looking at your 16-17 budget when we were doing that testing. Insurance, we're actually required to look at your insurance certificate to make sure you have insurance. It's basically all we do. Programs from an outside source. Because you have a single audit, that's where when you get enough federal money, we have to apply certain requirements set down by the federal government. That's basically covered by those rules. Highway and revenue testing. You get gas tax from the state. And the state says you can only spend that money on certain things. We have to test that to make sure you haven't spent the money on things you're not allowed to spend on. Investment of public funds. Again, the state statute says you can only invest your money in certain things. Fortunately, other than California, the states I've audited, they weren't allowing derivatives. And many of you may, it's been a long time ago, but Orange County had money in derivatives, and Orange County went because of that. It's been a while ago now. Oregon has a good rule that you're not allowed to invest in derivatives. And public contracting. So every year we get a list of the contracts you put out for bid, and we select some of them, and we test them to make sure you published it correctly, and then you followed the scoring you said you're going to follow when you put the bid out. So this is your general fund, revenues, expenditures, and transfers. So basically this is the inflows and outflows of the general fund. This shows for the last 5 years the revenue has exceeded the expenditures. And then the next one, I've gone back 10 years now.
All right.
Yay.
My favorite slide, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. So this is, what a shock. When 2008 hit, your days and fund balance went from 100 and over 153, and since then you're climbing back up. You know, at the end of 2016, based on the end of the audit report, you had 95 days you could operate in fund balance. And you've all heard me say, I would really, after doing this now for 34 years, I like to see anywhere from 3 to 6 months, so you just barely cleared the 3 month threshold. Because no matter what, I audit a lot of businesses, and a lot of people say, well, not for profits and governments, why do they have carryover cash? Any entity that does anything needs cash on hand to operate. You can't operate without cash on hand. This is your public health fund, revenue expenses, and transfers, and I know your favorite slide is the next one, so that shows what public health has done over the last 10 years. So 2010, jumped way up. And then you've been on the downward slide since then. So this one shows your mental health fund. And here's your day's cash in mental health. So at the end of 2016, it shows pretty good cash on hand. The most, the really interesting one is we get the community health. You went back to 2007, your negative days, and in 2009, you were negative days. You basically had negative fund balance in those months, so now you're up to 156 days. Any questions? I enjoy coming over here. I really have no concerns over your accounting issues. So
I appreciate the good information, and I think it's, again, a reflection of the sound financial condition of the county and some positive trends as we continue to build reserves to recover from the recession.
Well, I feel proud of the fact that we've been able to build back.
Yeah.
You see, it's the one fund that's down, the rest of them, the general funds come back, and I have to thank Janice and Wayne and all the people that are helping us do this. Nobody does this job to bring a county back without a lot of help, and you guys are doing a great job in producing this.
Yeah, I'm very pleased to see this report and to see these numbers overall, and it's nice the fact that after we had to cut so severely in 2009, 2010, that we have been able to do some very limited refunding or rebuilding in, within the general fund, added a few positions, made some really important strategic investments in equipment, but you know, that one chart says it all, why we have to do it really cautiously and keep in mind building up that fund balance, because the next rainy day is going to come. We don't necessarily know when, but it will come.
Hey, anything else? Thank you.
Anybody need to get a hold of me? I think you even have my cell phone number, don't you, Doug?
I know Janice. I don't get a hold of you.
Janice.
If I don't see you at the start of a race.
That's true.
Okay. Okay, we move on to reports. We're going to have a change from the here, take a report on the road condition since you're here, Roy. Doug asked the question, and I think it's a good chance. Just tell us what's going on since it's raining again. And we went through a record days here Sunday on rain. What's going on with our county roads?
I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. Right now, we're trying to mop up from Sunday and Sunday night's event. As of 9:30 Sunday night, we had three roads that were closed. Those all have been opened up now. Everything that we have is open. Basically, we've been kind of just bailing. Every time we have a slide, we're trying to stack it in a ditch, stack it in a wide spot, because we really don't have time to actually completely clean them up. And I just pulled National Weather Service report. They're calling for 3/4 of an inch to an inch today, 1 to 2 inches tonight, and then another 1/2 to 3/4 tomorrow. We may actually sustain more damage tonight than what we did Sunday night. Reason being that going into Sunday's storm, stream levels were down. We hadn't had significant rain for a while. The ground was able to take up some of the moisture. I believe, personally, that we've reached that saturation point now. And so my guess is that come tonight, we're gonna suffer some damage somewhere. Fortunately for us, the damage that was done seemed to be restricted to central Lincoln County. North Lincoln City, Depot Bay North, we received less rain. Basically, South Beach, Walport area south, we received less. It was the middle section of the county. Newport, Toledo, Elk City, Harlan, Burntwoods area, it took the brunt of it this last time. I really don't know what the weather flow is going to be for today and tonight. But as of right now, we only had one significant failure. That was on Hidden Valley at the 1-mile marker. We actually lost a fairly large piece of the road. They are putting the finishing touches on that fix as we speak. Everything else were what I would call small to moderate size slides into the road. They are kind of a pain, but they're usually easy to clean up, and they're far less expensive because there really isn't any materials involved. It's all just equipment time and man time. The slide in on Hidden Valley, I'm not sure what the total on it was, but I estimated the morning I was there, Monday morning, that we were looking at about 500 yards of material to fill the hole. And then we also had a contractor on scene with an excavator, and so there was time and materials invested in that one.
Commissioners, if I might, just a quick note to add to that, and I haven't even had a chance to talk to Mr. Kenyon, but on Monday night, the Newport City Council did pass a resolution accepting Big Creek County Road. So you may have seen there was a little bit of water overflow on Big Creek, but that is the city's responsibility. They understand that, and so they have now accepted Big Creek County Road, and we've just got a resolution on that.
And I was listening to the weather forecast when they come in. I have a little tab to my favorite channels, and this one here sounds like we could have just a 50 in it. The rain on Sunday didn't have much wind with it.
I've seen the same thing.
I'm not saying we'll get to 50, but if we do, that's enough when you've got that much wet ground and you start to move the trees a little bit, there's liable to be a vegetation slide.
There is potential for more damage, but so far, the last report I seen was 65 at the headlands, which to me, that's a mild breeze.
Yeah.
So
typical this time.
That's pretty
typical. You've lived at the coast your entire life.
That's correct. Yeah, and I've been with the road department since 88, so I have seen it all. Mm-hmm. I wasn't too concerned about that. I'm more concerned about the slide and the drainage issues.
Right.
We've been getting a lot of calls. In most cases, it's just too much water. When you have that much rain, water goes where it wants to go. And fortunately or unfortunately, it goes sometimes the wrong way.
So we were just talking about reserves, and I know the road fund, of course, has its separate fund. But, and again, I know weather, if we have a mild winter, that tends to be nice to our reserves. But the more challenging the weather, that can impact our reserves because of the additional expenses. Do you have a feel for what impact the weather's had on our reserves at this point?
To this point, the weather hasn't had any impact on our reserves.
So we're still basically within?
Yeah, we're still within our operating budget.
Okay.
Although it's only 1st of February, and there's a few lines, contractual services and our materials and services, that we're draining faster than what we probably should be. So I could tell you a story probably closer to reality come May.
Yeah. But again, that's because of the unexpected weather.
Right, and the thing is,
driving those costs.
If we had a huge event, something that was declared a disaster, then we would be looking for reimbursement down the road for, 75% of our costs. When we have these smaller, more isolated events, that's all on us. And so that's why I was talking about the difference between moderate-sized slides into the road versus these slides that where the road goes away. It's time and materials, for one, which is much more expensive than just time. And so, so far, I don't want to say we're holding our own, but I'm not pushing the panic button yet.
Well, I'd say certainly you and your crew have done a great job of keeping the roads open, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the report.
We get down to commissioners' reports.
Mr. Chair, I was in Salem at the beginning of the week. I had a chance to join the executive director of the Association of Counties and a couple of folks with the League of Cities for a meeting with the governor and some of her key staff, and she wanted to talk about her legislative priorities. Housing is on the list. She has proposed another $60 million in bonding for low and moderate income family housing. PERS reform. She says she doesn't really have a specific proposal to bring forward, but she is interested in anything that's legal. As you know, the legislature has tried to address the PERS deficit through a variety of ways through the years. A lot of the things they've done have not stood up to court challenges. Some of them have, but you know, she acknowledged that's very important. And her number one issue, it sounds like, along with cities and counties, is getting some kind of transportation funding package through the legislature, and the acknowledgement that this is a statewide issue with huge safety and economic impact. So hopefully we'll see some progress there. Also, I was invited to give informational testimony along with a couple of state agency people and foundation people on the impact of the housing crisis in Lincoln County. I think my presentation was a good counterpoint. All these folks were kind of at the high level state picture, and they asked me to really bring it down to what's happening in our local community with nearly 1,000 students who are homeless, businesses not being able to recruit and retain employees. So, you know, despite the huge deficit the state is facing, I think there seems to be a continued commitment to the legislature to doing what they can to try and address that issue.
Well, I missed last week's meeting, so I'll just report on the workforce, maritime sector meeting that was held, I believe, 2 weeks ago today. And we had about 25 people representing a wide variety of agencies and organizations from throughout the region. And basically, we're focusing on four areas. We're working on the legislative side as in an effort to get state recognition of the maritime sector as a sector of our economy that has great value and impact on the state. We're working to get data that we all intuitively know about the maritime sector, but to get that data broken out in a way that it's meaningful. And that really follows up on some work that Chair Thompson started. And also had the community colleges in attendance, three of them, and they're coordinating efforts to have some maritime programs developed using what's happening in Clatsop Community College as a starting point. And then also we're working on workforce training. There are dollars available for training individuals, both youth and adult, and so we need to narrow down what area of the maritime industries that we have a demand for trained individuals, and we'll move forward. So those are the four areas we're working on.
Congratulations on that area.
Excellent.
That's excellent work. You're actually creating jobs and highlighting an issue that's bothered me for years. And it's I think it's going to make a big difference in the long run. People won't understand it, but when they get, till they get the numbers in front of them and they see what that industry and the shipping industry and the wheat that's brought down the river and all that is in one place.
Well, you highlight an important point. It's not just the ports along the coast. It's the great river, Columbia, and ports along there, too. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I did attend the Children's Advocacy Ball. And those of you who didn't go, I've been worried about that. It's an important service for the county. It's not directly under the county control anymore, but I'd say it was a very big success, well attended. Problem was, it was the same time as Wyden's town hall meeting that was here, and I'll just say that there was 800 people there at the Wyden's town hall meeting, so that was a big event at the same time, and a lot of us, we had to be in two places at the same time, so... I'll just end it there and move on to constituent input unless there's any other comments.
No.
Okay, constituent input is limited to 5 minutes, can be on any subject you'd like to talk about. And would you please identify yourself?
My name is Cynthia George, and I'm here on something a little bit different this morning. And I'm here to honor my daughter's wishes. I don't know if a lot of you know, but I lost my daughter, Mr. Thompson,
No,
the one that you said reminded you so much of yourself. She was killed Veterans Day on Highway 20 in a car accident. She was killed instantly. Before that, in October 20th, there was a raid on the camp at Standing Rock. And I watched as our government and our military was used against people in prayer. And they drug people out of sweat lodges in prayer. And they shot them with rubber bullets. And then they have done nothing but attack using our police force and our military. And so I gave up. I gave up on this country. And I went and I burned my ballot in front of the Vietnam Memorial. And I was in a rage. I talked to many, many veterans. And I said, I would burn that flag. That flag, this Constitution, means nothing to me anymore. Many of them were angry, but they understood my heartache. And the election was coming, and I faced my daughter crying day after day. She didn't know what to do. And so she came to me on the election night, and she tore her ballot up. She said, Mother, I will never vote. It's just too much. I've lost faith. And so we got to giggling and laughing. I had to pull her out of it, and we laughed. We laughed about Trump not being able to, you know, use his gold toilets anymore and being behind a fence and all these things, just to bring some humor back into what has become a really ugly government. And so she was killed. But before she died, she said she wanted to come before you. That was her wish, was to come before you and ask you to support the young people at Standing Rock and the elders and the children. And I went out and I talked to the man here that runs the finances or whatever he does. And I one of the things is I want you to really think, as Seattle just did, where our money is held right now in banks. Make a statement. If you're holding money that's energy transfer, because here's the thing, is that they've proven with scientific proof. See, this EIS that yesterday the president has decided to force this pipeline through with no environmental impact study whatsoever. And the tribes were coming forward with scientific proof. That pipe will fail. That is one of the worst constructed. It ain't even about whether or not that pipeline should go through. But the fact that they are shoddy businessmen, shoddy construction. And so my other concern, as on the fourth day after losing my daughter, I held a gathering at the pipeline of GP, and we prayed, because we know 11 million gallons of effluent go out into that ocean every day, and we know 2,600 pounds of biosolids are dumped into the ocean. And as I sit and I talk to our fishermen, and they tell me about finding the cancerous growths in the fish, and they don't even fish out there anymore, and I ask, where are my fishermen? When are they going to start stepping forward and telling the truth about what's happening to our ocean and our sewers that are being dumped out there with these so-called spills and all these things? This isn't our dumping ground, you guys. We have to do better. So before you put $18 million into another building for wellness, let's be responsible for what's happening with our water. We got the endangered species list now hanging over our head. And the salmon are gone. That's what the fishermen are telling me. They're gone. And I think this is more control. And you, Mr. Thompson, said this, and I'm not attacking you, please. I respect you for what you're trying to do for the water. And so it's scary. Because if the federal government gets a hold of those rivers, and I think that's what this is about. This isn't about the environment. They don't care. It's about controlling our water resources. Nestle going in and piping our water and selling it back to us and all these things. Not being able to let us catch rainwater. So as a county, please, let's stick with renewables. Let's get composting toilets. And all these ways that we can truly go forward in a green environment. Let's see what Koch Brothers can do with hemp. You know, maybe we can use that byproduct as a biofuel and all these things. There's dreams out there, but we've got to keep going forward.
on all these positive things, but I ask you to please, today is huge. Honor my daughter. Remember that every time you drink water, give thanks to that water. Those children are sacrificing their lives today because they're bringing in. BIA went in and cracked a woman in the head on private lands given permission by our government. This isn't okay. The Constitution is gone. They're violating it every day in North Dakota. And we can't allow that as people. Or none of this means anything. So I thank you. And you guys have a good day.
Let me make a comment in this case. I normally don't, but I did make that comment about your daughter, and I meant it sincerely. I saw a young lady who was trying to change government to do things, and hopefully over time, if she would have lived, she would have made a change that was good for society, and I meant that sincerely. I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know, and I apologize for not knowing.
Thank you. I do want to say that she wrote me. I was there with her. I was brought to the scene. She died instantly. It broke her neck. Okay? Something mother. Her father was on the road with her. She wrote me minutes before she was killed. And she said I was her hero because she believed in what I was trying to do. And I'm trying to let go of the anger. And I'm trying to keep moving forward. And so this was my first step today to fulfill her wish to keep going. And try and find the positive in this darkness because it has become really dark, as you know.
So thank you. Could I say something as well?
I'd like to extend my sympathies. I was not aware of the loss of your daughter either. And, you know, we don't, as officials, usually speak out on things the federal government is doing. You know, it's not within our authority, but just personally, as a citizen, I am angered, sickened, and appalled at what's been happening at Standing Rock. I have helped two friends of mine, an artist and a military veteran, journey there and be part of the stand with the Native peoples. I'm appalled, you know. Water is life, and I know that fundamentally. I mean, the fact that Flint, Michigan is now going on 3 years without clean water should be a national shame for all decent people. So, thank you.
You know, my family's been without drinking water for 10 years, as you know, and I've had to buy every drop. And so this has become, it's always been very important, and I tried to bring monitoring to Toledo High School on the air and the water, and these things, they're just really important, and we need to be responsible. We need the truth of what's happening with this pipeline and what's going on here. This is our black snake here in Lincoln County, is that mill. I know that's a taboo to even discuss, but it's the truth. Thank you so much, and thank you for the support.
Cindy, I think your daughter would be proud of you, and I want you to know that I offer my heartfelt condolences for you in this time of sorrow. I know it's difficult for you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you.
Okay. Move back to agenda, and we have nothing else to complete.
No executive session?
No.
So the next meeting will be the Board of Commissioners here 9:30 on February 15th. Thank you. Okay. Meeting adjourned.